This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
This is Sparta with Simon Tinsley.
In the middle of the 6th century BC, the King of Kings, Cyrus, sat upon his Persian throne, plotting to incorporate the prosperous Ionian Greek cities of Asia into his growing empire, when a curious delegation arrived. These men were confident and refused to perform the accepted signs of deference to his person. They spoke a warning that any attempt to attack these coveted cities would incur the wrath of the Spartan people. Cyrus called over one of his advisors and asked, "Who are the Spartans?" Hello, I'm Simon Tinsley, and welcome to This is Sparta, where over the next 6 episodes, I shall do my best to answer this question. It is not enough to say that the Spartans were a southern Greek city-state, as there is so much about them that does not fit in with the standard definition of a Greek state at this time, and aspects of their lives that appear to be unique to them. The Spartans arrived in southern Greece around 1100 BC, and despite becoming one of the most powerful states in early Greek history, left but a handful of official documents for us to study. It is believed that due to their deep respect of tradition and discipline, few if any changes were ever made to their laws that required written proclamations. This, coupled with the rigid state-run militaristic education system through which all Spartan men progressed, negated the need to inform the public of current affairs. Upon arrival in the southern province of the Greek Peloponnese, known as Laconia, these Dorian invaders, who became known as the Spartans, instantly distinguished themselves from their northern Greek counterparts. Instead of simply displacing the previous inhabitants, they enslaved the entire population. Between 730 and 710 BC, they did the same to the neighbouring province of Messenia. At this point in history, these men were not the austere professional warriors that we recognise from popular culture. Instead, they were keen to exploit their newfound wealth, as well as the leisure time provided by a glut of slave labour. So began a golden age of peace and prosperity for the region. The Spartans indulged in hunting, for which their dogs were highly prized, as well as raucous drinking parties with wine drunk from golden cups. The arts flourished, with Spartan poets and musicians achieving high acclaim. Their sculptors worked throughout Greece, building elaborate reliefs and statues to the gods in various city-states. Their pots and terracotta works were highly prized, and excavations show trading links of modern Turkey, Egypt, and as far as northern Europe. Sparta was also renowned for its hospitality and its friendly disposition to foreign visitors, who they encouraged to visit. None of this fits well with our image of an inward-looking, xenophobic and militaristic state. Begs the question, what happened to change this society so dramatically? The reasons are a matter of much debate. Spartans claimed the revolution of their society derived from one man, Lycurgus the lawgiver. Though there is evidence that this man was worshipped as a god, many modern scholars argue that he never existed at all. Furthermore, changes attributed to him created a void in our sources of information. Of the handful of inscriptions surviving, half are simply lists, such as one naming the 300 who fought and gave their lives alongside King Leonidas at the Pass of Thermopylae in 480 BC. Against impossible odds. One of the reasons for this lack of inscriptions lies in the structure of the Spartan city itself. Unlike other Greek cities of the period, which were organized urban hubs surrounded by a defensive wall, Sparta was merely a merging of 5 villages, the historian Thucydides sums it up best when he wrote in the 4th century BC that if only the foundations of Sparta remained, because it had no temples or monuments of great magnificence, no one would recognize its previous strength or importance. He compared this to his native Athens by noting, the ruins of Athens would invite one to believe it was twice as powerful as indeed it was. This forces us to rely on surviving accounts written by outsiders. These are also limited in number, and surviving texts of merit begin as late as the 5th century BC. Our main sources are Athenian and include the philosophers Plato and Aristotle and generals Xenophon and Thucydides. Plato and Aristotle greatly admired the Spartan style of government and agreed with many Greeks that they were the most law-abiding people in all Greece. They contrasted their own system with that of Sparta to highlight that which they saw was flaws in their own form of government. For this reason, we must be wary of exaggeration in their accounts, and as there is no evidence to show that they spent any substantial time in Sparta themselves, their opinions must be seen as relying primarily on second-hand information. In contrast, General Xenophon, after banishment from Athens, lived in Sparta for some years as a house guest and gained a deep respect for the way of life he encountered there. Xenophon later became a mercenary captain and, as a career soldier, appreciated the regular and organized aspects of Spartan life. As a result of this, we are forced to judge his work with care, as his view of Sparta as a refuge, coupled with the comfort he derived from their militaristic lifestyle, may have made him biased in his accounts. Our most trusted of contemporary sources by far is Thucydides. Despite serving as an Athenian general during the Peloponnesian War between Sparta and Athens, his no-nonsense and emotionless account of that conflict, coupled with his efforts to recount the fact without opinion, have led him to be named as the first true historian. The final literary source is that of Plutarch. This Roman biographer was, however, writing hundreds of years after events, and his sources of information are not available to us. Much of his work can be described as anecdotal rather than dealing with cold hard facts, so his contributions must also be handled with care. All of this means that in the rest of this series, I must rely on the meticulous scrutiny of a few modern historians who have picked through the remnants of historical writing and scraps of archaeological evidence to reveal our best approximation of Spartan life. Next time, we shall examine how some of the lowest members of society changed the Spartan way of life for good.
For more, This Is Sparta, you can go to RNIB Connect Radio's audio boom pages and search for This Is Sparta.